Smith, Dr. John Smith.
I see. What a wonderful butler. He's so violent.
Will he remember any of that?
Scrambled his memory. Gave him a big old dream about being Dan the Soldier Man.
I shall miss him. Yes, I shall miss him.
As from this moment, there's no such thing as free will in the entire universe. There's only my will, because I possess the key to time.
Doctor.
You will obey me.
Unimaginable power, unlimited rice pudding!
You may be a doctor, but I'm the doctor. The definite article, you might say.
I was taken out of time for another reason. And I have every intention of finding out what it is.
They're human beings, if that's what you mean, indulging their favorite pastime of trying to destroy each other.
Who are you?
Perhaps if we knew his name, we might have a clue to all this.
Excellent. Absolutely excellent.
You've had too much cash.
Yes, I have. Yes, I have. Pumpkin spice coffee.
I had a pumpkin spice chai tea a couple of weeks ago.
See, I can't get into the chai tea because of the milk you got to put in it. That's a little funky to me.
You got to have somebody else make it for you.
Really?
You got to go somewhere else and have them make it for you, and yeah.
Yeah, I went to Wawa.
Wawa?
Yeah.
Holy hand grenade, Batman. That's like South Jersey kind of stuff.
Oh, well, it's like County. Philly, too. It's like a lot of them in Philly. Yeah.
It's like
I remember
accents.
Using Wawa as a landmark from someone, like, not from this area. Or not from, like, the tri-state area, and they're like, what is a Wawa? I'm like, it's like a 7-Eleven.
Yeah, but with a nice little sun and a bird on it. So it looks Asian a little bit.
Yeah, I went there a couple weeks ago.
Do they know what a 7-Eleven
is? Sounds good. And it was really spicy, and I think it was too spicy. And then in the middle of the night, I was on the toilet.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well, do they know what 7-Eleven is? Or do they have to be told about Krausers?
Well, I think 7-Eleven is sort of... Not maybe not international, but it's national. It's a national chain,
Like a Dunkin' Donuts or Starbucks, Star Schmucks.
Where Wawa is sort of like Philly, Jersey, I guess as far north as here.
Because you know what, Dan, if you go out of the tri-state area and go to another area, they also have a tri-state area.
Yeah, but just not our tri-state
exactly.
Area. Yeah, it's
now is our tri-state area.
I don't know if I believe that though, because when they talk about ours, they say the tri-state area.
Yeah, well they may be a tri-state area, but we are the tri-state area.
That's what I mean.
The definite article, you might say.
Now is our tri-state area New Jersey, New York, and Connecticut?
Everything
or
comes back
see,
to Dr.
New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania.
Now, see, that's the other thing I've always questioned,
too. Because I've heard Connecticut involved as well in the tri-state area.
See, I think what they do is they say, well, you know, it's the tri-state area. It's actually made up of four states.
It's all because
we should decide
of, like,
which one
New York
to leave
City
out.
Is sort of like on... Yeah. Well, though Pennsylvania's not really there.
No, because, I mean, Connecticut would be. And Connecticut's so small, maybe just gets swallowed up by New York.
Well, it's because Connecticut's small, dude. Pennsylvania kind of like shoehorned itself in.
Ham-fisted.
Pennsylvania's like, listen, the original capital is here, so you're going to suck it.
Yeah.
We're Pennsylvania was very ham-fisted.
We're part of the...
Yes, exactly. $8.99 a pound. Getting on to a very special episode, Kill the Moon.
I wish I was ready to just hit the button right after we were done saying that, because I was like, I'm totally going to leave that on there.
Oh, yeah, you leave it. I think this is great. So anyway, I'm drinking pumpkin spice coffee.
Are we bantering?
Yeah, we are. We got the recording.
I recorded all of it, too, so I was like, all right.
Except the gray part with your ham-fistedness. Before that, about Peter Harness.
Yeah, that part I missed.
We didn't look up Peter Harness. Peter Harness is the writer of this episode, and Dan is our researcher and forum guide. So
greetings.
Yes.
I will be your guide.
Like Dogen. We're three absolute Doctor Who fanatics. Oh, I believe my wife is getting home. Yes. Yes, in our tiny studio in nowhere, New Jersey. Dan is with us via Skype. To my right is Rob, as per usual. And week to week, we will cover Doctor Who for you and bring insights and adventures that have never been told. And now my wife's home. Greetings, wife.
As she throws down the body bag size.
Yes.
Laundry bag.
That's why we have the Cadillac. Oh. I'm kidding, of course.
Yep,
Jamie, that's not why you have a Cadillac. Or
that's why we have two Cadillacs.
Okay.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Do you want to join us for Kill the Moon?
Why? Did you mention my...
No, wait. We just started. But Dan is being very ham-fisted.
I am.
Why are you being ham-fisted?
And Barry keeps asking me if I have my Peter harness up.
She can't hear
Peter,
you because
your harness up.
We have the audio blocking thing going on, so she's cute.
What's she doing?
She has her Dr. Seuss Doctor Who mashup T-shirt.
Oh, let me see.
He wants to see.
Yeah, she can't hear anything. So.
Yeah, she can't hear you, Dan.
Ah, very nice. Very nice. Yeah,
he says very nice.
Oh, you can only hear me through the headphones? So I'm like a silent specter with
you
mouth
are.
Moving.
You are our Vashti Narada.
Yes.
He's not?
We can see him.
Oh, that's true.
No, I'm a silence.
Oh, yes, you're a silence. Very good. With long fingers and a nice suit.
Yeah, I always found that disturbing, the fact that they wore, like, suits.
Yeah, it made it more like a mobster.
How about the fact that they're all crumpled up, too, though?
Yeah, like wet.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Well, I guess, you know, they're like, well, I guess we can't show up naked, so let's just, well. We didn't wait for the suits to dry. Well, I guess we don't have anything else to wear.
If you're just joining us, we're discussing Kill the Moon. No, not. We're not. This was filmed in Lazzarotti.
Mm-hmm.
We filmed Planet of Fire there as well. Way back in, what, 1987, I guess? No, actually earlier than that, 1983 or 84. 84.
It was Peter Davison's last season.
Yeah. Was that Turlough's home planet?
Yes, it was.
Right.
Planet of Fire.
Turlough. You always have to say Turlough's name like Tegan did. It just made it that much more.
Hello. I always liked calling him when he was, Mantran Undead. You just hear a voice, hello.
Yeah, that was definitely the Doctor Who married couple. Always bickering, always fighting.
You're
always
unreliable. It's a terrible Australian accent. Plus, you know, like a very masculine female Australian, that's not at all.
She was a masculine Australian. I didn't think so.
No, it's like not at all Australian. It's like a man trying to do a female Australian badly.
I've heard your high-pitched Terry Jones voice. We don't.
I know. I do. I do. I sound like Terry Jones when
I do.
Yeah,
you
like,
do.
Like a hag. I'm not doing it.
It's okay. Yeah, you got your Peter Harness on. Peter Harness was the author. What has he written? He's Swedish, you said.
He lives in Sweden.
But he's an avid Doctor Who fan. Obviously, he's brought up some interesting classic Doctor Who stuff in this episode. Now, what have they said about the forums here, Dan, on Kill the Moon? You are our scourer of forums.
About this particular episode.
Yeah, how is this received?
Generally, I think it was liked. I mean, you know, you're going to have a vocal minority always, and at the same time, you will have a couple people who don't like it that are vocal, and then you have the people that like it who get upset because one person says that they don't like it, and they feel like everyone says that they don't like it, but it's only just one person, you know, that maybe posted several times. And then you always get the responses like, if you actually look, you know, there's only like one or two people who didn't like it. That's like forum bickering.
Yeah.
Or they go off on tangents about, you know, whether or not Stephen Moffat's writing is chauvinistic.
Oh,
and they
go on
for like 10 pages.
Yeah.
Oh.
the misogynist argument.
Misogynist, yeah.
Well, he didn't have a hand in this one. This is the first episode all season where Stephen Moffat's name wasn't attached to one of the episodes.
Yes, I didn't notice that either. That's a good eye, good eye.
Thank you. Observant, especially on pumpkin spice coffee. So we have Kill the Moon, Season 8, Episode 7. And there's a lot of depth to this episode. And I would think, from the reviews that I saw, I tried to look. Yahoo's was very positive and yet negative at the same time. And then positive again. It was interesting. And there was a few others that were like, this is the climax of the season. To them, this is Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
Some, and like also on the forums, there were some people who felt that the ending was really like the way it was all resolved. They felt it was unbelievable. And then people who get upset that they got the weight of the moon wrong. And, you know, it's like little things that seem to bother people that, you know, I'm trying to just watch the show and, just, I don't know, like, I'm a fan, but at the same time, I'm not there to pick everything apart. Or maybe I am because I'm doing this.
Yeah, yeah. The second time I am. The first time I'm there to just relax.
Yeah.
Can we get a synopsis on this, Rob? Because this is an interesting one with a lot of different layers, and I'd love your take on it.
Well, really, this one's actually, in a sense, it's as simple as the Doctor says he wants to take Courtney on an adventure to prove that she's special. And the typical chaos ensues. I mean, maybe not typical. Maybe it's a little bit of a different style of chaos that ensues. But more or less, they find out that they land in a spaceship as it's crashing onto the moon. And there's a group of miners, Mexican miners, as in ER, not OR, not children Mexicans, but, you know, people that work under the ground.
I didn't even think of that.
Digging holes.
A bunch of Mexican miners are up on the moon.
So
crossing the border, up on the moon, wherever you want to go. Coughing and respiratory diseases.
But which is a kind of an interesting, that the whole backstory to that was really neat too. But maybe we'll get into that later. Maybe
I not, actually but. No. I'm going to stop you at Mexican miners because I actually Googled Mexican mining companies, and there are some really big time Mexican mining companies. So it didn't like come out of the thin air.
No, I believe that. But and even just the way that we, you know, we can that the way people project that, you know, like the economy and stuff like that is going to progress. It just wouldn't surprise me a whole lot to see people stretching out and trying to do things that are a little bit beyond limit. But
in that way, the fact that miners were on the moon when I saw it reminded me of a older science fiction film from the late 1960s done by Hammer. So it was a British science fiction film. So it was entirely possible it was in the mind of the writer, but it was it was called I forgot the name.
Up your Hammer horror films.
No, it wasn't. It was actually them trying to do like a sci-fi.
Oh,
it
really?
Was Moon 02, I believe.
Hmm.
Moon 02, and they turned sci-fi and they did like a Western bend to it, where the moon was like prospectors were going to the moon trying to find, like, you know, gold or whatever, you know, what precious minerals. And it was basically, it was a Wild West, and it was the moon.
Okay.
And it was pretty good, actually. I kind of liked it.
I can imagine that. But
so that's what made me, like, Miners on the Moon, where the moon was sort of there as something to make profit out of, which is entirely possible that that's the future, especially if space travel becomes privatized, like mm-hmm. it seems to be going in that direction.
Yeah, yeah.
Companies would be out there to be making profits and finding minerals and stuff.
Yeah, well, we got things like, we'll get back to the synopsis in a minute, but yeah, I mean, we got India, actually, just this past week or within the last 2 weeks, landed their first mission to Mars. Now, they were the first space mission to launch to Mars and to achieve it on their first go, which is pretty amazing to think about.
Robotic landing?
Yeah, your robotic landing, not man-powered. But
right.
Yeah, but for it to be the first mission, they actually made it to Mars. And then on top of that, they did it at something like I forget if it was a ninth or 1/90th or even 1/900th of the cost that NASA spends to do one mission to Mars.
I mean, we got NASA doing all sorts of weird stuff. They don't go to do space missions anymore. The space program in the United States is gone. Yeah. It's dead.
But I think in the India Space Agency...
privatized. Yeah. Now you have like SpaceX and Virgin.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, so I think it was 1/9th. Whatever it was $78 million or $77 million. But the India Space Agency launched a robotic excavating device, whatever. I guess similar to the rovers that we've sent. But as opposed to the European Space Agency, which spent nine times as much, whatever that is. But I just think that's interesting because it's in line with like what Dan was saying. People are going to privatize it. SpaceX, like you said, is another one.
And it's only 35 years in the future in this episode.
Yep, that's the other thing I was going to mention. It's not like it was that far off either. So and that sounds pretty legitimate, to be honest. It's very possible.
That's a very long way to go for who knows what kind of minerals. But anyway, continue the synopsis.
So anyway, the synopsis, yes.
What happened to this episode, Rob?
What happened to this episode?
Go for it.
What happened to it or what happened in it?
I am all jacked up on Mountain Dew.
In case you couldn't tell, listening. But yeah, so they find the, I guess you would call it a mining colony. It seems to be abandoned. They find like at least one dead body. There's some weird noises going on. They run into what looks kind of like a giant spider, but turns out it's not. And
somehow it's a single-celled, non-chromosomal organism.
Yeah, basically it's a bacteria or whatever they said. So, but so the plan was that, well, a little bit earlier, I'm getting ahead of myself, we found out that the moon's mass is changing, that ultimately it's heavier than it used to be, so it's causing all kinds of problems with the tides on Earth, and whole cities are being wiped out because of the water level is too high and all this. And they run into a weird situation where the mass is kind of changing, where they show the one point where Courtney Woods is kind of like floating up in the air, and then she comes back down. And,
very important, yes.
Yeah, yeah, it gets nuts. We have that stuff. I'm trying to avoid saying chaos ensues because I do say it pretty often. I've skipped it for a while, but anyway.
I just like to remind you every now and then.
Yeah, I know. So, but it comes down to the doctor is trying to be the doctor about the situation, and he's trying to find a, I guess you could say, more peaceable way to resolve the situation than most people initially think of, because it turns out basically the last space shuttle that humanity had available to itself was being used to fly a bunch of, I guess, atomic warheads to the moon to try to destroy it.
Correct. And so I'm going to stop you right there. I want you to play the last audio clip because this is the problem that I had with this episode. The only problem I really had with this, well, other than being preached at a little bit, was that this continuity error between the Seeds of Death, a Patrick Troughton episode, and this was so overt and so extreme that they actually forgot about this episode. So if you'll play the last clip.
My father engineered the first lunar passenger module, and I traveled on the last trip back to Earth before it all finished.
Before all what finished?
Space travel.
But if the rocket was so good, why did you stop at the moon?
Aye, why end there?
Because of TMAT. TMAT, the ultimate in travel. With about as much sense of adventure as a synthetic carbohydrates factory.
Surely rockets would still be useful as an auxiliary means of transport, would they? Besides, how would man get beyond the moon?
Nobody cares anymore about exploring space. Life made, well, it was made too easy by TMAT.
I see. So you lost government backing?
The project was abandoned, except by me.
So that was the actual time period was the late 21st century. So it would have been 2080, 2090.
Right.
Somewhere in that, era. Not as the doctor says, if you'll, at the end of the episode, audio 7, the doctor mentions what happens immediately after the moon.
The mid-21st century, humankind starts creeping off into the stars, spreads its way through the galaxy, to the very edges of the universe. And it endures till the end of time.
So there's an obvious contradiction there.
See, I don't know, though. Because at the same time, you know...
You're going to get into temporal things?
Well, no, not even that.
Timey-wimey? Just,
well, they haven't developed the TMAT technology yet. So maybe it just took a little bit longer.
Well, I think even beyond that, though, what, you know, they already said, they made the point at the beginning, or early in the episode, that the shuttle that they were using was in a museum. So it was outdated. They said that they were no longer doing space travel.
But the man in the late 21st century was the one who built
shuttle. Yeah, well, but at the same time.
If that was the case.
But maybe it took the situation that took place in this episode to reignite the passion for space exploration.
Well, that's what he says there. It just seemed like, to me, the only explanation to me, and Dan, say
yeah,
what you said again.
The TMAT technology.
Mm-hmm.
And
now,
he was saying that people weren't interested in rocket technology anymore.
Explain what TMAT was, Dan.
Matter transference.
Right.
Really.
So from Earth to the moon, you could go sort of like a zip
particle.
File.
Let me actually look up TMAT and see where. Transmat, I know that's what that means.
Yes.
But...
So it's before Star Trek, kind of, you know, speed me up, Scotty. Yeah. That's basically what it.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically what I was thinking was that if this hadn't happened yet, 2049, because Patrick Troughton's was previous, almost like in time, there are these gray areas that things can change. And because this hasn't happened yet, it's now possible that after 2049, humankind would go. But that would make the Seeds of Death episode irrelevant. Because time would now go into a different route
mm-hmm.
from the time stream or the time tree or whatever you want to describe it as.
Right.
Thinking in a...
Well, I'm trying to think, because they said, what, the late 21st?
Mm-hmm.
Wait, no.
Yeah, late 21st in Seeds of Death. So that was really the only problem I had with it. And you have info, Dan?
I'm just... Because I didn't think about that.
Ah.
And I just saw that episode.
I got your explanation.
Okay.
Rob, whispering Rob.
It's because Clara wasn't sharded until after her experience with Matt Smith,
right.
It was Clara who pressed the button not to hit the button on the. It was Clara being there that stopped them from hitting the button.
Well, Courtney would have hit it too.
But would she have? But that's a whole other point, though. Courtney wouldn't have been there if it wasn't for Clara being there with the doctor.
Yes. When Clara was splintered off into the timelines of the doctor. Okay. There's a lot of different levels in this because there's more things that I'm going to bring up. And Dan was talking. I'm sorry, Dan.
Well, I think Rob basically, you know, I hadn't really thought it, and I'd seen the Seeds of Death. That mm-hmm. one was Seeds of Death. I always get Seeds of Death and Seeds of Doom confused.
Yes, Seeds of Doom is the crinoids.
Yeah. Okay, so
Tom
Seeds
Baker.
Of Death is the... Yeah. The Ice Warrior one. Yeah. Okay. So
yes, the Ice Warrior.
Yeah. I get the impression more I can kind of without like, you know, overly analyzing. That's the thing. You have a show that's been around for 50 years. It's gonna contradict itself. It has before.
Mm-hmm.
We have like three or four different explanations on why Atlantis disappeared. I think we had one during Patrick Troughton and then a different one during John Pertwee. So sometimes it doesn't even need to be that long of a time period.
That's what I was going to say. Even amongst one season, sometimes we've had flaws like that.
Yeah. So sometimes I think when things start making your head hurt, I sometimes just have to kind of step away and just sort of accept that they don't get along. But I think in this, you could possibly say, like I was saying earlier, that maybe the event that happened in Kill the Moon was what inspired the creation of the TMAT technology, or the use of TMAT technology for space exploration, where rocket technology was pretty much gone already.
I accept that.
No,
we don't know exactly how late after 2049 the first shuttle was and the first rockets were made again. We do know that this private man from the Seeds of Death did make a rocket that was used in that episode.
And perhaps that was the first thing. Maybe they went back and started doing rocket technology again, and then TMAT took over and made rockets irrelevant.
Mm-hmm. And so then that brought it back again. I don't know where to go with that.
Yeah.
Or we just, like Dan said, we just have to write it off that that's just what happens.
Yeah. I always joke with a friend of mine when we as fans get stuck on a single aspect of the show that we're over obsessing on a TV show, and that we need to kind of step back and take a breather.
Hey, at the same time too, if you really want to go for a loop, just picture if the episodes haven't been written along the same timeline.
Yeah, that's possible too.
Maybe
it could be an alternate.
Maybe some of the episodes are following a different branch than others, and we keep bouncing around and nobody's ever told us that. That's why the stories don't always match up.
Yeah, you know, we can have like a parallel universe thing, which Doctor doesn't get into very often.
Yeah, Inferno is their big parallel universe thing that became a spinoff for a lot of different sliders.
Some people suggest like the entire Unit Years was sort of like a parallel Earth, because there was like a female prime minister and
there was set in the 1990s, even though it was the 1970s. They mentioned the 90s in it. It wasn't contemporary. So basically with this episode, okay, you have Courtney Woods, who's using the psychic paper to buy liquor. Mm-hmm. Does she have a vortex manipulator on or something? He mentions, I'm not sure exactly.
I think she found it in the TARDIS and was like playing with it or something.
So apparently he told her that she wasn't special, which we already know that the Doctor doesn't make that mistake again,
mm-hmm,
from Donna Noble. And so Clara is basically imploring the Doctor to take it back. And rather than take it back, he says, okay, how would you like to be the first woman to step foot on the moon? And so she really destroys the quote, you know, one giant leap for man.
The first thing, yeah, exactly.
One step.
One small thing for that.
yeah, thingy for this thingy. And, So the Doctor, the throwback is Tom Baker and his yo-yo. So we see Peter Capaldi with the yo-yo testing gravity, of just like he did in Ark in Space. I thought that was really neat.
Yeah, me too. I thought that was really.
And one thing I did like is that the Doctor here doesn't patronize people. He didn't tell Courtney she was special, because in his mind she wasn't special. So he's not going to just say something just for the sake of saying it so that it'll go away. I like that. That is the kind of person that is someone that you really be a close friend with, because mm-hmm, they're going to tell you their honest opinion,
yep,
whether you like it or not. And I respect that.
Mm-hmm.
So he's kind of, I was telling Dan before, he's kind of like Clint Eastwood and Gran Torino a little bit, you know, they get off my lawn, you know. That's this mm-hmm Doctor.
Mm-hmm. A real gruff kind of...
But who's a hero underneath it all.
Exactly, but the fact is, yeah, he's somebody who's looking out for other people.
If you'll play audio one.
Well, you're just going to have to shoot us then. Shoot the little girl first. What? Yes. She doesn't want to stand there and watch us getting shot, does she? She'd be terrified. Girl first, then her teacher, and then me. You'll have to spend a lot of time shooting me, because I will keep on regenerating. In fact, I'm not entirely sure if I won't keep on regenerating forever.
Doctor, what are you doing?
Gravity test. So it'll be very time consuming and messy and rather wasteful, because I think I might just possibly be able to help you. You see, I am a super intelligent alien being who flies in time and space. You gonna shoot me?
Initial reactions, Rob.
I loved his gravity tests. His little kind of weird sideways walk. I thought that was amazing. just the way that he, as much as you're like, really, the doctor is throwing Courtney in the line of fire first, I was like, no, but okay, it makes sense. You know,
because he's showing them how crazy
yeah.
that it is, even thinking about it.
Exactly. And then, like, he just packs so much into that. And then, you know, the whole thing about, you know, you just keep shooting at me and I just keep generating, which I think is funny. He says generating instead of regenerating.
I thought he said regenerating.
Yeah, he did.
Oh, does he? Okay.
Okay.
I just heard it wrong both times. That's all right. And the comment about not being entirely sure he won't just keep regenerating forever, which we've kind of talked about in the past, that we think that might be the case. Just the whole, you know, an alien from outer space flying around, you know, or whatever, an alien flies around in time and space and quite possibly being the one who can help them. It's just...
He's super intelligent, and yet he's walking all silly and
well, that's kind of the sideways. Point of it, too, exactly. He's almost doing like a Ministry of Silly Walks kind of deal, talk about how super intelligent he is, and it's kind of like, what?
Again, I really felt he was channeling Tom Baker's Doctor during that whole speech. Yeah. Is exactly the kind of thing that... And that's in a way, it would be the way that Tom Baker's Doctor would approach it all. You know, he would, you know, show them the ridiculousness of what they were saying and just, show that, like, yeah, you know, I'm like, you know, really intelligent. I'm a time traveler and, you know, you probably need my help, you know, so you probably don't want to, you know, you don't want to do what you're saying.
Then we get to Capaldi saying, when I say run, run. And, of course, it's a throwback to Patrick Troughton. And Peter Davison used it in Warriors of the Deep, Warriors from the Deep, the Silurian Sea Devil episode. And he also said, I think, during his regeneration period when he was going through each doctor as he regenerated. And he had his hands on his lapels as William Hartnell. And then he was telling Adric... He called Adric Jamie and said, when I say run, run, don't you see this regeneration is failing, he says. So it's an old throwback. We meet Tony Asoba, who plays Duke. And Duke's been in Doctor Who before. Do you have that up, Dan? Where?
Yes, I do. I have his page up. He's a Scottish actor, actually. He... has been in three Doctor Who stories, I believe, which I am now finding. I believe one was Dragonfire. And here we go. He was in Destiny of the Daleks, which was during Tom Baker's run. He played Lan, who I'm not sure who that was.
Yeah, he's a Movellan.
Okay, one of the Movellans?
Yeah.
I thought maybe.
That was 1979 he goes back to.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So that's, what, 35 years ago now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he's an old-school doctor guy.
And he plays the leader of Kane's forces in Dragonfire in 1987.
Okay, yeah. I remember him now. So I thought that was nice. I know Peter Capaldi was very excited from the behind the scenes to be working with someone that had been involved in the classic series.
And he's been killed in the last two Doctor Whos that he's been in. So he wasn't killed as a Movellan, as far as I remember. I don't think he was the guy whose arm came off and outside.
Well, the thing with the Movellans, though, is they would die and then they would come back.
Yeah, because they were robots.
Yeah.
Then we have Lundvik, her name is. She's grieving Duke's death after he got attacked by one of the spider things. And it's basically 10-second grief, and then they move on, sort of, because they have to. Courtney asks to go home, which the Doctor, if you'll play audio too, I think is very revealing to the Doctor's character.
This is dangerous now.
It was dangerous before. Everything's dangerous if you want it to be. Eating chips is dangerous. Crossing the road's no way to live your life. Tell her. You're supposed to be teaching her.
Look, I have a duty of care, okay? You know what that is?
Of course I know what a duty of care is. What are you suggesting? She's fine. What are you, 35?
15.
I love how he gets things so wrong.
Well, you know, when you're, you know, what, 1,100 years old or whatever, you know.
He thinks a coat will disguise him. That's his disguise. And what are you, 35?
That's the whole alienness of him. Yeah. Again, Tom Baker coming through.
Yeah. One thing I thought was awesome about this episode, I watched it with my headphones on, and it's awesome how whenever they were walking around talking to each other with the helmets on, that the audio effect was the only sound of their voices that you hear. Like, it was almost as if they literally set up the suits that they were acting in with a microphone, like an internal microphone, like they would actually use, and that was the audio they used for the actual soundtrack. You know, it wasn't like an external microphone picking up their discussion.
Interesting, yeah. Almost like an NFL coach talking into a headset into someone else's helmet.
Right, exactly. It was, and like I said, like that was like the pure audio that they used. Like they didn't mix that with like an ambient mic. Like that was the only audio. So I just thought it was just a neat effect. Like we've talked before about how, you know, at the theater, like they almost spend a little bit more time with audio production than they have in the past. And it was just really cool that I noticed it.
So everything's dangerous. This is basically his point. And she's just saying, you know what, she can't just hide her whole life.
Mm-hmm.
But I think being with the doctor, of course, is a little more dangerous than normal.
Probably.
So I can see both. So we learn that he has gray areas in his memory. Mm-hmm. So does he know that the moon is still there? Does he know that it's a new moon? That's really the question. Was he able to give Clara the advice that he needed? And I think he kind of reveals it later on in the episode, but he, at the time, he wasn't exactly sure. So these aren't fixed points, is what he was trying to tell her. If you play audio 3, I think it's interesting the way he described it.
Why are you shutting her in? We don't need to stay, do we?
Hey.
Well, it's obvious, isn't it? The moon doesn't break up.
How do you know?
Well, because I've been in the future, and the moon is still there. I think. You know the moon is still there, right?
Maybe it isn't the moon. Maybe it's a hologram, or a big painting, or a special effect. Maybe it's a completely different moon.
But you would know.
I would.
If the moon fell to bits in 2049, somebody would have mentioned it. It would have come up in conversation, so it doesn't break up. So the world doesn't end. So let's just get in the TARDIS and go.
No, there are some moments in time that I simply can't see. Little eye blinks. They don't look the same as other things. They're not clear. They're fuzzy. They're gray. Little moments in which big things are decided. And this is one of them.
So he's taken quite a different tact than David Tennant. Waters of Mars.
Mm-hmm.
Where there's no one else but me. You know, I'm the last Time Lord. It's, it's up to me. So you had mentioned, Dan, previous when we were...
Yeah, in the Tom Baker story, The Pyramid of Mars, when Sutek was in danger of being released and the Earth was in danger, Sarah, who was... I mean, this place was at the 1920s, I think, they traveled. It was early 20th century.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. And Sarah's like, well, I'm from 1980, so I know 1980, everything's fine.
Yeah, I think it was the teens. It was 1910 and on. Somewhere.
Yeah. And so Tom Baker's like, well, if it is, let's go. So he takes her to 1980, and it's a wasteland. And he shows Sarah that they just can't leave. They have to stay. So that's what was going on in my head when that scene was happening. I was remembering that.
Hmm. Right.
And I mean, they go about it differently, but they're essentially saying the same thing, being told differently.
And then, of course, he gets orders from someone. Lundvik actually orders them, Clara and the doctor, to stay. And he says, decision made. And that's what his defense was in Trial of a Time Lord, that this is a superior who is asking me to help. I'm not intervening of my own free will. I'm intervening because someone here is imploring me to stay and help. Okay. The doctor jumps into the amniotic fluid after he picks it up with a yo-yo. So he knows that this is a creature. Mm-hmm. Because amniotic fluid, of course, is with a pregnancy. And
yep. And hence all the bacteria that he was talking about leading right, up to this.
Living on whatever is being created. So finding... he says the spider's bacteria is trying to figure it can't weigh 1.3 billion tons or whatever. So then you find out, hey, the moon is an egg, he comes up with. And this is from, actually, a story called Born of the Sun in 1934 by Jack Williamson.
Hmm.
And the basic premise is that, and it ran in Amazing Stories initially, and then is run in a couple series of comics and things like that afterwards. But basically the premise is that the stars and the planets and their satellites are living beings. And the sun and the earth and the moon will all hatch at one point.
Hmm.
It runs differently than what happens in this episode, but the idea was there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not something that's new. I thought it was a neat idea.
Yeah, it was interesting.
Because now when a Doctor Who fan looks up at the moon, they're going to think of this episode.
Right, right. Unless you happen to be a Doctor Who fan who already reads things about how they think the moon is an artificial satellite anyway.
Okay. Let's hear about that.
Well, they're just theories that the moon isn't a naturally occurring body. That it's actually an artificial satellite. People have done different scans, and they say you could almost, like, something about how you can, when you do a certain scan, you see that there are, like, it almost looks like plates. You know, I don't know.
I've heard something very, Dan is looking at you like, what in the world?
I haven't done a lot of research on it because...
Not so much what to the theory is, like, what are these people thinking?
Well, I guess more, I don't know. See, that's one of the things that I don't understand is, like, I think I've heard people kind of say, I guess kind of like along the lines of this story, is that it's actually an artificial satellite that was put there millions and millions of years ago. But, you know, I don't know. I don't believe it because I just don't believe in that because, whatever, we look at the lunar, you know, the tides and everything like that, and I'm more of a proponent in the belief of intelligent design than a bunch of super smart aliens that planted it there a long, long time ago.
I have a willingness of suspended disbelief in just about anything until I actually see it, touch it, talk to it.
Well, that's why I'm saying, like, you know, it's, you know, I look up and I say, oh, that's kind of funny that people would think that, you know, and it's just interesting. I don't know. I like hearing different people's ideas on things, whether or not I...
I'll take you up on that. I've heard two different kind of theories like that. One, okay. When we went up to the moon, that when they actually had the pads on the moon that were extra large, because if the moon was millions and millions of years old, it would actually sink through the dust. That the dust accumulation would have been so great that it would have sank, and they didn't know how long it was going to sink. So the weight of the craft actually had huge pads on it, in case that was the case.
Okay.
Another thing that I've heard is that when they actually did land on it, they felt a reverberation that lasted for more than half an hour, as if it was hollow inside, and it was a almost like metal hollowness inside. That was
there. You go. That's part of what I've heard too. Is that there like are things
the moon,
like that?
The moon was created there artificially, like you're saying, so that we would have tides and so that the oceans wouldn't be stagnant, so that life would be here.
Right. Exactly.
But who knows? Because I've never been to the moon, and I don't know. And then anytime you bring that kind of stuff up, it's like this the weird side of the internet and the weird side of YouTube and stuff. Like you'll have the astronauts actually flip out.
Mm-hmm.
On that, and then the X-Files did that whole thing with the astronaut in that one episode where he saw an alien face and up there with him. Just recently, they were working on the outside of the space station, mm-hmm. and there was supposedly like a UFO in the picture shot, and I looked at it and it was just like, I don't know, a grain of rice kind of thing looking, and it didn't look like they saw it until after. Right. I don't know.
Well, there's been all kinds
there's
of weird...
a lot of stuff on the internet.
Well,
about
that's
that.
The thing. There's been all kinds of weird, unexplainable stuff. Now, I don't know how much of all of it is unexplainable, but, you know, I don't know.
I don't know. And I think that even if people were sure, people who can be sure, that the public would never hear about it anyway.
The public would never hear about it, and there's probably a large majority that wouldn't believe the truth even if it was verified as truth. Whether it was to indicate that, yes, there is alien life or that there isn't, I think there would still be a lot of people that would dismiss it. I mean, there's also how many rumors about having a base on the far side of the moon that we can never see.
Or rumors that we didn't actually land on the moon and it was filmed.
Well, there's that too, even.
In a studio somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
As part of the Cold War.
Yeah.
Yeah, as part of the Cold War to...
Mm-hmm.
Stick it to the Russians.
Not so long ago, maybe it was recently, I saw video footage. One of those types of people that said that was accosting Buzz Aldrin and basically calling him a liar and everything, right. And Buzz Aldrin punched him.
Yes, mm-hmm. That is what I saw as well. That's what I mentioned, astronauts. Yeah, I didn't know the specifics. I didn't really take to the story and try to dissect it. So it's unique, this thing that's growing inside of the moon.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only one of its kind. If you play audio 4, it's revealing to humanity.
Doctor, what is it?
I think that it's unique. I think that's the only one of its kind in the universe. I think that that is utterly beautiful.
How do we kill it?
The doctor thinks it's utterly beautiful, very John Pertwee.
Yeah, I definitely got that vibe at that moment.
And the crocodile
Pertwee's
hunter.
Doctor would definitely, and that's the thing, the fact that he doesn't tell people what he thinks they should do. Pertwee totally would have, so that's where he differs. But the way he sees it is exactly the way Pertwee saw it.
Mm-hmm.
But would have seen it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because Pertwee would have been fighting for its right to survive.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. Interesting take. If it was a different doctor, how would it have played? You said this story was originally written for Matt Smith?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what Dan was saying. But that's what I mean, too, exactly. Like, that particular portion, that particular part of it. Well, that and also the leaving it to Clara and Courtney and...
Lundvik.
Like, I can't picture Matt Smith doing that. Like, saying, like, oh, this is your choice. Bye. See you later. Like, I can't picture Matt Smith doing that. He just wanted to be so involved in being the protector. And, you know, I just don't... And, again, I don't feel that Matt Smith ever had an episode to, like, kind of exemplify, like, his stance on unique alien life. Like, did Matt Smith ever felt like he was trying to be the protector of the unique and beautiful...
Well, I think it was his second story, The Monster Below. Was that like a space turtle?
He was going to kill it nicely.
Yeah, and he got very angry because he felt he was forced into the position where either he were to like wipe its brain and make it into like a mindless entity or kill it. And he didn't have any other choice. And I remember he said the line, "No one human has anything to say to me today."
Right. Mm-hmm. And then Amy Pond, she decided that she was going to press the button for the Queen, Liz 10. And then she, at the end of the episode, it was very touching when she says, "It's very old. It's the only one of its kind. It's very old and it's very kind." Who does that remind you of?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we have the three women who are left, because the Duke and Henry, I guess is the other guy's name, who nobody who got killed right away, the old astronauts. So right away I'm thinking the three fates.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm thinking folklore.
Okay.
Yeah.
I get that.
And it was deliberate. It just seems so perfect. I mean, you had the maiden. 15-year-old, mm-hmm. What's your name?
Courtney.
Courtney. And then, you know, you had You had the what's the middle one? in the Fates.
The mother, Lachesis.
Yes, the mother as in Clara, and then the crone.
Clotho. The crone. One spins the thread, one measures the thread, and one cuts the thread. So the one who spins is the old spinster, the one who measures is the mother, and the one who cuts is the daughter, usually in the three fates. So the old crone wants to kill it. The mother wants, she isn't sure how long the string will be measured. She doesn't know what to do, whether it's going to be killed or not killed. She's debating.
Right, she's not sure.
And then the young woman wants it to live.
I'd say that's pretty much, yeah.
Because I've seen this on the forums too. It was brought up.
Oh, really?
So it definitely to me seems like it was deliberate. It wasn't, you know, something that was just sort of written and sort of ended up like that. Right. It seemed like that was the author's intention from the start.
And that's as part of the story construct. That's one of the reasons why the Doctor takes himself out of the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Play audio 5.
Why do you want to kill it?
It's a little baby.
Doctor, how do we kill it?
Kill the moon.
Kill the moon. Well, you have about 100 of the best man-made nuclear weapons, if they still work, if that's what you want to
do. Doctor, wait. Will
that do it?
100 nuclear bombs set off right where they are.
Right on top of a living, vulnerable creature.
It'll never feel the sun on its back.
And then what? Will the moon still break up? You said we had an hour and a half?
Well, there'll be nothing to make it break up. There will be nothing trying to force its way out. The gravity of the little dead baby will put all the pieces back together again. Of course, it won't be very pretty. You'd have an enormous corpse floating in the sky. You might have some very difficult conversations to have with your kids.
And that's when she says she doesn't have any kids. I think right there he tells Clara exactly what he thinks.
Yeah, he's definitely channeling John Pertwee there. You know, he's saying, you know, this is the decision he should be making.
Mm-hmm. Right, because he's basically telling me he wants his dead corpse. It's a very up in the sky, this thing that's going to satellite Earth for the rest of its existence.
It's like you'll have to live with the consequences of your actions.
Yeah, and Clara says you can't blame a baby for kicking. And so automatically you have the whole abortion thing is what this story. And then I didn't see this anywhere because no one wanted to bring it up.
It was mentioned in the forums also.
It was? Okay.
Yeah.
Now, this is a little bit what I was talking about being preached at. And I think Doctor Who has to separate itself from political and religious discussion just for the sake of being a show that we can sit back and relax. I don't like being preached at when it comes to the Russell T. Davies whole being gay is okay thing. I don't like being preached at that abortion is wrong or abortion is right. I want to be able to sit back and watch Doctor Who and not have to think about that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's enough of that in the world.
Yeah, I agree.
We all have our opinions, and I mean, a story can. It's funny to me how politically one line drawn in the sand will take on this story, and one line will take the other side. Rather than, and the I'm more of the doctor's kind of thing, more of the libertarian kind of stance, where, you know, remove me from the topic, please. You know, it's not my decision to make. And the doctor's extremely, extremely blunt about it not being his decision. And I think Clara is really ticked off about it. In one of the audios that we have about the doctor's comment about time to take the stabilizers off your bike.
Didn't Nippo after Putin kill Hitler? I've never killed Hitler. And you wouldn't expect me to kill Hitler. The future is no more malleable than the past.
Okay, don't you do this to make some kind of point.
Sorry. Well, actually, no, I'm not sorry. It's time to take the stabilizers off your bike.
And he says it scornfully.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you expect everyone to make the decision for you, no matter what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same way with Danny Pink. She wants Danny to tell her exactly what she needs to do. Okay, the DVD brings Courtney back, which I thought was neat.
Mm-hmm.
Because it harkens back to the Blink episode with David Tennant.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It would have been a nice thing to have in earlier Doctor Who's. I'm thinking, wow, that would have been nice to have so that you didn't lose the TARDIS ever.
Well, I guess somebody has to be in the TARDIS to insert the DVD, though.
That's true, yeah. So he says it's not his moon. Womankind is left. It's your choice. So it's very cut and dry.
Mm-hmm.
This episode is very deep on many levels, and they use a lot of different allusions to things from folklore, like the Three Fates and things. But they also, this is an episode about abortion and the abortion debate. So if it lives on, the people on Earth may die, is what Lundvik is saying.
Mm-hmm.
So that comes to the, you know, if I have the child, I may die.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's a bad pregnancy or something like that. So this is where she's coming from. Then Clara's coming from a different way, and Courtney is saying it's just a little baby, and they're both basically saying that. And some decisions are too important not to make on your own, is the thrust of the doctor's argument. And Clara is angry that she's going to have to make a decision on her own, even though the doctor actually told her what he thought.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't listening.
No, exactly. And I thought her acting at that whole scene was, as you've been saying, like, you know, really focusing on her being an actress was as awesome, because her like yelling at the doctor without like yelling at him, and then having like the one tear like roll down, like she was trying to stay, you know, as composed as possible in front of Lundvik and Courtney.
Exactly. You actually saw her eyes become big saucers at one point. Exactly. Like she wanted to scream out at him.
Mm-hmm.
But you also saw the control freak spoiled brat that she is inside.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And then only allowing like the one, and maybe not even allowing it, just it happening, that she had just the one tear that rolls out, and she just like, like.
It was great acting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was good.
And Courtney gets it. Courtney says, so we just need to make up our minds. She was hearing everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And she's the one that's going to cut the string or not cut the string in the role of the youngest fate.
Right.
The mistress, or the maiden.
The maiden, yeah.
Yeah. So ground control then contacts them, and they give them the ultimatum. You know, basically, leave your lights on if you want it to live. Shut your lights off if you want it to die. And so the Earth makes a decision out of fear,
mm-hmm.
and shuts all their lights off. So Clara leaves the decision up to other people at the end of it. She can't even make that decision. She leaves it to everybody else anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Until
she decides.
Yeah. It's that spontaneous.
Yep.
She knows what's supposed to be. So it takes her that. No, she can't actually go through with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which, and then I saw on Yahoo, actually, this is where one of the Yahoo reviews, because I only looked at a couple reviews, because I wanted to see how this was taken, because of the obvious political and the abortion debate thing going on. So the person was really glad, then upset, and then really glad again, because they showed in their mind, the doctor was a control freak boyfriend who impregnated Clara, and then Clara had her epiphany,
mm-hmm.
and made her decision on her own. So Clara and Courtney both go for the switch to cancel the nukes. And so once the decision is made, the doctor knows that no one's going to die, as if he's just now remembering.
Mm-hmm.
So that grayness would be gone because the decision was made. In my mind, as I'm watching that.
No, I kind of picked up on that idea too, that he's kind of the idea that he, it's kind of, some people have applied the same idea to like God and what, you know, how his prescience has, what his omnipotence works.
That's a free will.
That, yeah, exactly. It's more related to like the way that some people view free will, where, you know, God can see the way that everything will end up based on how we decide, but he waits for us to decide to say that that's how it is. And I guess that's kind of the way the Doctor sees it, at least the way that they portray the Doctor seeing it in this, is that, you know, as soon as the choice is made, he'll, like, remember that he knew what the result would be, but until the choice is made, he's not, you know, he doesn't know the result, right. I guess, yeah, which...
Does that make sense, Dan?
Yeah, yeah, that... Once the decision is made, the Doctor can see the results mm-hmm. of that decision.
And
but
remember
until
the
decision
result.
Is made,
right.
he doesn't know either way what the result is going to be until the decision is made.
Right, right. Yep. So.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting take on time travel, too. And it should be the right way to see it. I think it's they worked it very nicely. Because that's the how I saw it. Now, I know a lot of people on the reviews that I read that didn't really, I don't bring it up.
Well, because I don't think a lot of people think about stuff that deep. You know, I mean.
But I think the writer really had that in mind.
I think he did, because I think that's the whole point of why the Doctor had to step away and say, you have to make the decision. Because the Doctor isn't the kind of guy that would, well, not that he wouldn't force his opinion onto a situation, but, you know, there have been other gray areas where he's had to wait for things to happen before he can move on. You know, so, I don't know. But that's all why, like, that this whole situation, like, we're discussing now is kind of why my comment about maybe the whole series takes place in multiple dimensions,
timelines.
If you want to say different
yeah,
timelines, because, you know, because there... You can't say that we jumped to Trenzalore at the end of time or even the Orson Pink episode. You know, we can't say that this is the final end without taking into consideration the fact that a choice was made now about whether the moon stayed or not,
I
know, whether they killed the creature or not. So that can only be one option. So in a way, we have to then wonder, is the TARDIS choosing which line to follow when they go into the future or what? Cause I don't know. That's probably more than the show was really trying to get at.
Well,
but...
cause the old girl always takes him where he needs to be, not where he wants to be.
Well, exactly. So maybe that's the point. Maybe it jumps around a little bit because of that kind of stuff.
My brilliant wife mentioned Genesis of the Daleks actually mm-hmm. about this episode. Tom Baker has both wires ready and a bomb set ready to destroy the Daleks
mm-hmm.
forever. And he says, have I the right? Have I the right to do this, to mm-hmm. destroy the Daleks? Just like he said he couldn't kill Hitler.
Right.
He said there's alliances that are formed. Even though the Daleks are purely evil, there's alliances that are formed. Some good comes from the Daleks' existence, whether they like it or not.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like you picture, like, say in you know, in our future we run into some kind of alien being that's trying to attack the Earth, you know, and so if we saw that and we said like, oh, we need to destroy this preemptively versus like waiting to see what happened, and then who knows, maybe all the dividing lines that we as people on the Earth now have, maybe they would disappear in the face of that kind of enemy. So all the people now that are hating each other and picking on each other and killing each other for the reasons that we are, maybe those wouldn't matter anymore in the light of that. And so in the same way the Doctor says, you know, like you said, look at the alliances that were made in the face of this complete utter evil.
Right.
You know, like there were things, the good things that came from them existing, even if they themselves were never a good thing. I don't know.
No, it makes sense. So, 2049, people look up is what he says at the end of the episode. And mm-hmm. they see something beautiful. As this dragon kind of flaps its wings, mm-hmm. makes a new egg that's like the same size as the moon, which is
yeah.
I was going to mention that. How is it that creature
that came
from inside the moon?
Yeah, I think Dan
just the internet jumped all over that, and some people like thought that was terrible. And I was just
Dan,
like, hey, you know what? I'm letting it go. You know, it's like I'm not going to let it bother me.
One question for me, Dan: mm-hmm. Was it ham-fisted?
Maybe slightly overly sentimental.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So that was the new moon.
Now, one thing I picked up with that, and again, this is really going to be just, there's no point, but if this happened, right, then is this a change in course? Another example of how things would be a change in course of humanity. Wouldn't this dragon alien thing that birthed out of the moon be kind of like a really important thing in the history of humankind?
Unique.
And so therefore, I would kind of picture that every single spaceship that came from Earth after that happened would have some kind of an icon of the dragon on the side of it. But we never, you know, I guess the point is just that, you know, if they're going to try to make something this dramatically important to lore of all of Doctor Who now, because now this is going to be, I mean, it should be pretty important to all of Doctor Who now.
So, when it comes to human beings, yes, of course.
So I just think it's kind of interesting. It'll be interesting to watch and see if they carry that on or not, because, like I said, I just think that this, you know, this is the Doctor already described this as kind of being the impetus for getting back into space travel.
Right.
So, you know, I don't know.
There's a little mention of Courtney becoming the U.S. president, by the way.
Yeah, I kind of caught that. Did you catch that? Yeah.
It's because they actually, Claire actually mentioned, well, the U.S., no, the president of America, she said, not the United States, which was funny. Right. The British take. He's not here. And then Lundvik, of course, said,
maybe that's
the
play with the future, too, even.
Lundvik said it very scornfully, she.
Yeah.
And then later on, the doctor says, not bad for a girl from Coal Hill School and her teacher. And he mentions when he's throwing the books down on the platform, the president, her, Courtney, which would, first of all, in my mind, go against Constitution because a natural-born citizen, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, that's a whole other debate.
Yeah, we'll not get into that one today.
So apparently he pushed Clara too far because he's the evil boyfriend that got the woman into the situation and cleared off.
Mm-hmm.
So she has a meltdown. And that's audio number 8, where we get to hear Clara's acting.
Tell me what you know.
Nothing. I told you I've got grey areas.
Yeah, I noticed. Tell me what you knew, Dr. Else. I'll smack you so hard you regenerate.
I knew that eggs are not bombs. I know they don't usually destroy their nests. Essentially, what I knew was that you would always make the best choice. I had faith that you would always make the right choice.
Honestly, do you have music playing in your head when you say rubbish like that?
It wasn't my decision to make, I told you.
Yeah, well, why'd you do it? Was it for Courtney? Was that it?
Well, she really is something special now, isn't she? First woman on the moon, saved the Earth from itself, and rather bizarrely, she becomes the President of the United States. She met this bloke called Blinovich.
Do you know what? Shut up! I am so sick of listening to you!
Oh, well, I didn't do it for Courtney. I didn't know what was going to happen. Do you think I'm lying?
I don't know! But if you didn't do it for her, I mean... Do you know what? It was cheap. It was... pathetic. No, it was patronizing. That was you patting us on the back saying, well, you're big enough to go to the shops by yourself now, go on, toddle along.
Well, that was me allowing you to make a choice about your own future. That was me respecting you.
Oh my god, really, was it? Yeah, well, respected is not how I feel.
Right, okay.
I nearly didn't press that button. I nearly got it wrong. That was you, my friend, making me scared, making me feel like a bloody idiot.
Language.
Oh, don't you ever tell me to mind my language. Don't you ever tell me to take the stabilizers off my back. And don't you dare lump me in with the rest of all the little humans that you think are so tiny and silly and predictable. You walk our Earth, Doctor. You breathe our air. You make us your friend, then that is your moon too, and you can damn well help us when we need it.
I was helping.
What, by clearing off?
Yes.
Yeah, well, clear off! Go on! You can clear off, get back in your lonely bloody TARDIS, and you don't come back.
Clara.
You go away. Okay? You go a long way away.
Hello, love that the TARDIS actually makes that little blip sound too that they put in the audio. Like the TARDIS hears it and understands. And what do you think, Dan?
It was interesting because I could totally, from the start, understand the Doctor's position and being, you know, this is something that involves humanity and humans, and this the decision should be made by humanity and humans and not him. And the Doctor's done it before. He did it with, you know, he did it with Ace, where he put them in situations where, put them in really tough situations where, because they were companions and he knew them, he trusted in them, he believed in them, and he knew that they would make the right choice. And at the same time, I can understand, you know, it's like, I guess every like, you know, when you're a kid and you move out on your own for the first time and your parents allow you to make some mistakes, you know, and you pay for them. And at the time, you're angry that your parents allowed you to, you know, be put in that situation. But in the long run, you learn so much by them and you come away as a stronger person because of it.
I couldn't have said it any better than myself.
Yeah.
What did you think? I thought Clara's acting was brilliant.
Yeah.
I really loved Clara. And I've loved her this whole season. Well, from the time that after the first 45 minutes of the first episode on this whole season. And I thought she just like hit it so well. And the Doctor was actually really just taken aback by it because he was doing the libertarian doctor thing that he always did, is let people respect other people and their right for freedom and right to make their own decisions, make their own mistakes, like Dan is saying.
Yep.
Harkens back to Pertwee again.
Mm-hmm. And at the same time I was annoyed at Clara.
Yeah.
Because I was like, yeah, he walks on Earth and breathes your air and looks at your moon, but it's not his moon. You know? Like, he spent a lot of time with Earth because he has a little, you know, he's got his little affection for Earthlings because he just, as he just said in the past, that, you know, he appreciates how smart they are for how young they are and, you know, all of what they do. But at the same time, I don't know. I think, like, when Clara, like, oh, don't lump me in with the rest of these little humans. And I'm like, well, but why not? Like, what is honestly so exceptional about you, Clara Oswald, that wasn't about Ace, who, even though she was from a different time and, you know, her backstory is from a different, like, planet, she originally came from Earth, which they only mention a couple times. But
they actually showed a picture of her, too, when she mentioned to the other companions.
Yeah, so, but that's the thing. That, and I mean, like, I don't know. I was kind of, I mean, obviously the Doctor didn't portray it that way, so they didn't write it that way, but I don't know. I would have been a little bit like, really? You know, if I spent a year and a half, 2.5 years with you in the TARDIS, and, you know, to be honest, this 15-year-old who I mistook for a 35-year-old, Courtney Woods, is, you know, I think more of a companion to the Doctor than Clara's been so far. Like, right away, when I saw her in the previous episode, I was like, she needs to be in the TARDIS. Like, she does. Because she's the one that pushes the Doctor's buttons and pushes his boundaries, not, you know,
challenges him.
Yeah, exactly. Someone who would
the
actually...
The Doctor always needs someone to challenge
him. Like I said,
him.
It's like you think of like Ace and Sylvester, you know, or when Ace was playing against Sylvester McCoy,
Sophie,
as the Doctor.
Yeah. But Clara's challenging him here, but giving up, because she trusted him as her friend.
Well, that's the point, exactly.
And she didn't want him to mention the training wheels, but yet she wants the training wheels.
Well, that's the other thing, too. I would have had such a hard time. I mean, like, okay, my kids are only 7 and 5, but still, if my kids get to be like teenagers... And they say, stop trying to tell me how to, you know, stop trying to be my father and telling me how to do what I need to do. But then when I back off and they yell at me for not doing it, I'm going to be like, I know just the way I am. I'm going to be like, look, you said you wanted your independence. I gave it to you. Don't yell at me when you get hurt by it.
Right.
If you don't want me to leave the training wheels on your bike and you go down the road without waiting for me to hold on to it and you fall and you skin your knee, don't be upset with me. when you get hurt.
Well, that goes back to my comment, the last installment of the podcast with Danny being a father figure as well, because he sees her as a little girl who he has to help. And I just want to help you, Clara. Yeah, he's the knight in shining armor who's going to save her from herself.
And that's the thing that's kind of funny is, like, you know, Clara was the one that came up with the brilliant idea of, you know, we're going to talk to everybody on Earth, you know, send the message out, which is kind of funny, actually, now that I think about it. They had 45 minutes, and somehow, even despite all of the water changes on the Earth, still within 45 minutes, they were able to transmit that message across the whole world. But anyway.
Well, and the lights would have been only one side of the Earth, not the other side of the Earth. But, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, like I said, that's the small details we don't have to really worry that much about. But yeah, even that, even if like, I try to imagine what Courtney would have done if it was just her and Lindvik. Like, how much differently would Courtney have behaved? Like, I have the feeling Courtney would have just walked over and pressed the red button right off the bat and not debated it like Clara did. Maybe because she's younger and she just sees it more simply. You know, she would have just seen the alien life as a life.
Yeah, that's the way she did.
Where, you know, she was, because that's what, like, her thing. It's just a baby. She kept saying,
she,
like,
was just,
you know,
yeah, she had it. She said, we just need to make up our minds. That's all. Between the three of us. So she did see it simply.
And I think Clara, in a certain effect, is still clinging to Matt Smith's cuddly doctor, the Earth is defended kind of thing, where David Tennant was the same. They would have been, you know, elbows deep, you know, and I don't see Matt Smith and David Tennant being able to pull back like Capaldi did. So I think she's reacting again to him. You know, she's kind of accepted him, but at the same time, you know, that's something about his new personality that's really, you know, bothering her, and in a way is showing that she still hasn't completely accepted him as the doctor, I think.
I get that.
And it's interesting too, because just one episode before, we hear Danny tell her about if he pushes you too far, and here he did. He pushed her too far. So she starts to tell Danny what happened. And Danny ends with the advice of, you're never finished with anyone when they can still make you angry. Which, that was half truth. But, I mean, how did you get so wise? She says to him. Because sometimes people who make you extremely angry will, that's it. You have that separation and you're done with them.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but then you're not still angry about it, you know,
no,
because
you made
the decision. The thing is, I think he could tell that she was still angry, so she still cared.
Well, I think that's the point, exactly, is that if you're still able to focus on the thing that this person said that made you upset, and that means that you're still holding an expectation of that person, and they've offended that expectation. So she's still grieving over that, as opposed to just, like, being like, oh, well, they said something I would have expected to say, so I'm not mad at them. You know, like, so, when you have, like an annoying friend, and, like, they hang out with you, and they say something dumb, you're just like, you know, that's going to happen. Or an annoying, maybe an annoying friend isn't the best way to put it, because that's not really the way. If you have, like, an annoying uncle or aunt that always say the same stupid thing, like, you know, that, and you're not close to them because they're just stupid, you know, you're not going to be offended by the stupid things they say. But then again, if it's your best friend that says that same stupid thing to you when you don't expect them to say that, you're going to get more angry at your best friend.
Oh, I'm saying, yeah, well, there's triggers in everybody.
Well, of course. You just
and
expect certain...
She definitely, the doctor's pushing all her buttons.
And I think that's kind of like Dan was saying, it's part of it, it's just because she says she's accepted the regeneration. She says she's accepted the doctor as Peter Capaldi as the doctor, as opposed to Matt Smith. But at the same time, maybe it's just because there's, you know, a newer level to the change that she hasn't seen before. And so now this new level to the change of this whole, you know, yelling at her to, you know, that he's going to take the stabilizers off, you know, maybe just threw her for a loop because she was like, well, what? But
well,
you always would have just held my hand and walked me through the trouble before.
Right.
Like,
well,
you know.
She's used to the doctor yelling at other people and telling them to shut up. But when he turns that on her, and that's why she does have sort of battered wife syndrome, you know, making excuses for him to the guy in Time Heist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's Psy.
Yeah.
In Time Heist, I can definitely see that, and then she finally had the meltdown.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the Doctor sees it completely differently, and mm-hmm. I can see it from both sides, just like Dan can.
Yeah.
You know, so they have to get in there and work it out.
Yeah, no, I definitely see both sides. I mean, it's just.
So what can we expect with the next episode? Is Clara going to be in it? Because during the trailers, it looked like the Doctor was alone, right?
Like noticeably absent. Although all the press write ups mention her, I don't know if they're using it as like the fact they have a big fight that in the trailers are trying to hide the fact that she's actually involved, or maybe the Doctor goes off on his own, like the Deadly Assassin.
Right. Gallifrey. I always wanted to go to Gallifrey. Yeah, he drops Sarah Jane off. So we have, the Orient? What's the actual?
Mummy on the Orient Express.
Okay. Yeah, can't wait.
Yeah, I'm kind of excited to see this one. I know, like I said, I only saw the trailer at the end of the episode for it. I haven't seen any of the other trailers online, but I know I was pretty impressed with the look of it. I know Dan had said earlier, I don't remember if it was on the record or off, but this season's definitely been a little bit more fear-oriented. I guess more like the, you know, some of the classic episodes where they were...
Like the early Tom Baker stuff. Yeah. Like the Philip Hinchcliffe era. Yeah.
Yeah, really trying to, like, be more scary. Like, not necessarily trying to be horror, but just scarier situations. But, yeah.
Good, the better. The more, the better.
I agree.
And I thought... So, overall, how did you rate this episode?
That's tough. I'd probably give it 3 TARDISes, yeah. Personally.
Dan?
I don't like to do ratings. I find it too difficult to...
Yeah.
To narrow... I mean, I like the beginning a lot for its creepiness factor. And I liked the Doctor... Like leaving the decision, because I wasn't expecting that personally. Although when he did it, I accepted it.
I gave a thumbs up to my screen when I saw that. It's like, yep, that is exactly. Because
when he did it, I'm like, yes, Peter Capaldi's Doctor would do something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I accept it. And I think that's cool.
Because it was so unexpected, I think, from the audience as well. Like, I actually, I thought that's what he was going to do. And when he did, I was not expecting them to go that way.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that they did. Because it threw them, everyone a curveball.
I agree. And I think, you know, audience in general wasn't expecting it. You know, some of like the minor details may have been implausible or. You know, but at the same time, I don't think that anything like that was enough to make me dislike the episode. I thought it was a pretty solid. I wouldn't put it like up to like a listen level,
mm-hmm.
which
mm-hmm.
I consider listen is probably going to be one of those that's going to be like a future classic, like Blink. In a couple mm-hmm. of years, people mention Nose in like the same sentence, yeah. But who knows. But I thought this one was pretty solid.
Who knows?
I'll say the one thing that I didn't mention before, but I definitely have to give props to the creepiness of the episode, because it actually made me think of Alien a little bit.
Yeah, the whole beginning. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was definitely getting Alien vibe. That, in a good way.
Yeah, exactly.
Not like a rip-off way, like an homage way.
Exactly. Like they were trying to pay it some credit, and yeah, it definitely had that.
I
like
the color schemes. I like the red and the against the gray background. It was almost black and white with the red.
Well, and the red like glue, like,
or the orange, I guess.
The red.
Yeah, it was kind of like an orange.
I want to say glue, but that's not the right term.
And
like
and,
the glowing red on the bacteria was neat, because it was like reflective or like glowing and. In the low light, that was just a really cool effect.
But for me, regardless of how I rate this episode, because it's between 3 and 4 TARDISes for me overall, but it's going to be one of those episodes that you'll always remember.
Oh yeah.
And I think that's where it'll have its staying power. Because for a lot of people, I mean, it had a very, very positive reception for a lot of people as being, some even saying this was the best episode of the season because it was more Doctor Who.
Hmm. Yeah, I've seen stuff like that.
Wow.
So, I mean, hey, you know, vanilla to chocolate, sherbet to, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Strawberry. You know, everyone has their own taste.
Exactly.
And for me, I think that, you know, it's going to be one that sticks around in people's memories, you know, especially because it has the that metaphor for the moon as an egg.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when people are going to look up at the sky, you know, every other day or every day, however often they do. And I like that he said that, you know, it made people look up because everyone is so focused on whatever they're doing. Mm-hmm. Down. People don't look up. I love looking up. I love taking mm-hmm. walks at night and that kind of thing. And so I had a nice walk after this episode with my wife, and we discussed the episode, and that's when she brought up Genesis of the Daleks, and it was a perfect night, you know. So
mm-hmm.
I'll remember this episode as something that was positive overall.
Oh yeah.
On to the next. Thanks for listening, everybody.